All right, creatures of the night, welcome to Talking Taker, episode 90 of our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. My name is Alex Dorio, and I want to thank you for joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. And I am joined, as always, by my tag team partner, my wrestling buddy, the most patriotic man I know, Travis. Oh, my man. Are you ready tonight? Talking about SummerSlam 2002. Are you ready to, I guess, make America badass again?
That's my motto. I have a tattoo on my face.
Yeah. I've been meaning to talk to you about that. that's a new look for you. I like it, though.
Yeah, man. Especially as a member of the RTC now, I definitely am out for America. Team America, heck yeah. So,
that's right.
Yeah. No, we are definitely going to get pro-America here. Sorry for you international listeners. It is what it is. We're following Taker's storyline here.
That's right.
Pro-America is going up against the un-Americans. And, yeah, we're going to get talked about that here soon. So,
wave the stars and stripes high. Big Evil has seen the error of his ways and is singing out the Star Spangled Banner as he's coming out to the ring right now. He's got apple pie and American dreams in his eyes.
We talked about apple pie last week.
Oh, we did. Good. No. American pie, not apple pie. I don't know. Oh, man, but we are talking about this battle between The Undertaker and Test, our favorite wrestler against one of our least favorite wrestlers here.
Oh, yes.
We've made it. And the big turn. The Undertaker has turned heel back in December of 2001 and has been running roughshod as the Red Devil across the land. And now, all of a sudden, we're going to see him turn back to his good devil ways. I don't know. The man who walks with angels, perhaps.
I guess, yeah. He's going to be an angel walker for a little bit here.
That's right. So we'll tell you all about that and how this match with Test happens as we continue our journey through every single Undertaker pay-per-view match, step by step, one at a time, that will lead us here to SummerSlam 2002. But we'll, of course, tell you the story of how we got to that match. That's what we do here every single week as we take our time-traveling motorcycle back to 2002, to the night after Vengeance 2002. The Undertaker just lost his Undisputed Championship to The Rock in a triple threat match with Kurt Angle as well in there. It was an incredible match, an underrated match, one that I think we had forgotten about and a lot of people sleep on, but it's a great match to go revisit as well. But it's actually, as we mentioned, it's the last time we're ever going to see Undertaker holding that WWE Championship, and it's actually also going to be the last time we technically ever see Undertaker as a heel, because this babyface turn, he's never going to go back from.
That's true. And yeah, it's true. He did some nefarious things in his feud with Brock Lesnar in 2015, but they were both kind of doing that. But yeah, you're right, man. That was his last heel turn, so that's it. So he does not take a page out of his former tag team partner, The Big Show's playbook, and turn heel or face as the wind blows. He's going to stay a babyface from here on out. So,
and I tell you what, man, I think that's why he is so respected and thought of in such high, you know, esteem by us, the fans, is because his character has not been muddied down by that sort of stuff. And, you know, you're not always in control of that in this business, but I think that definitely has helped his character and his value as this Hall of Fame legend, is that, you know, there is such attention paid to his character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to pay attention to this first night of Raw here. This is Raw 478 of July 22nd, 02. This is the first full show of the Bischoff regime. You know, he was introduced last Monday night. And, dude, this Raw, I mean, going back and revisiting some of this stuff, like I said, I keep beating dead horse here, but I remember these like it's yesterday, man.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what happened on Raw last week in real life, like, because there's no stories anymore. I can recount all of this stuff, man. This Raw is where Triple H is back. He turns on HBK after they have that brief DX reunion. I remember marking out like a 16-year-old would, you know, thinking DX is back together, and then he turns on him, and Dude, 3 minute warning, one of our favorite, most underrated tag teams debuts this night. You and I love those guys.
That was a great gimmick, man. Huge fan.
So just
their size and the way they were jumping off the top rope and just murdering people.
Oh, yeah. And anytime we heard the words 3 minutes, like in real life, we'd just be like, whoa, 3 minutes. Yeah, you know what that means.
Oh, man. We were living and breathing WWE at this time. Oh, no doubt.
RVD and Jeff Hardy are going to unify the European and Intercontinental titles in a ladder match, which is, again, it's like a ladder match every other week, as you've mentioned.
We talked about one last week.
Yeah. Brock leaves at the end of the night to go sign with SmackDown with Stephanie, and then we get Eddie Guerrero versus The Rock in a non-title match in the main event. It's just, man, I was excited for all those things I just named. So it was just fantastic stuff, man.
Well, I was excited about the next guy that's coming out.
I was going to say. But one thing I did not remember is that Chris Nowinski comes out here after that Eurocontinental title match. Nowinski comes out, who just, it cannot be stated how he had such potential. Man, he would have been a great A-heel. I put him up there. I mean, he's kind of lumped in with William Regal here. And I think that's a great tag team partner for him. As far as a heel tendencies and everything, it's fantastic.
The only Harvard graduate in WWE history.
Exactly. So, who's that dummy on Otunga? Did he go to Harvard?
What? No. Get out of here. I don't care.
but he did. Maybe. I don't know. I don't like that.
Up to this point. Okay.
Oh, no, absolutely. Up to this point. But, yeah, anyway, Chris Nowinski, he's fantastic. He comes out and he's like, you know, talking about not understanding why people boo him. He's like, I don't get it. You know, is it because I'm a Harvard graduate? And he's like, you know, I get why you can't relate to me. He says, but before he can even finish what he's about to say, we hear Dead Man Walking comes on, and JR tells us that.
I don't know what other kind of degree you would get from that school.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But JR is just, you know, excited that Undertaker's a good guy again. I think, I don't know. He's excited. So, but JR's like, you know, this is not going to be a good night because Taker lost that Undisputed Championship last night. So Taker gets in the ring, just kind of corners Chris Nowinski, cowers over the corner, and Chris very, you know, chivalrously offers him his mic. You know?
Yeah, I thought it was very respectful. You know, he was following the first rule of WWE, I believe.
Exactly.
Respect the Undertaker. And he did.
Exactly. Gives him the mic.
Yeah.
Taker offers to shake his hand like he's been doing recently to folks. And Chris obliges, shakes his hand, but Taker won't let go. And then he just goes ape on Chris Nowinski, just beating the crap out of him, manhandling, winds up hitting the last ride to make a statement. And then JR, in a nice bit of continuity, says, you know, Taker shook hands with Jeff Hardy and John Cena out of respect, but, you know, I guess he doesn't respect Chris Nowinski here.
I guess not, man. It's kind of a jerk move by Taker, honestly. Chris Nowinski was nothing but respectful to him, dude.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But I guess Taker heard about what Nowinski was trying to do with Molly Holly backstage. Maybe he was standing up.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get some cringeworthy stuff from 2002, extra cringeworthy in 2019. So the route that Chris Nowinski's character is about to take here with Molly Holly, the things he's about to say on public television are horrifying. But this is definitely going to solidify Taker's babyface turn. You know, beating up Chris Nowinski, doesn't get any more babyface than that. So, and then another moment I marked out for, Bischoff is backstage talking to an undisclosed member of the roster. You don't see him. He's off screen. And he's like, you know, just like the Undertaker showed Ruthless Aggression out there, I know you can too. And the camera pans over, and it's my boy Rhino.
Yeah.
The man who got me on TV.
The man beast. Year.
The man beast. Exactly. So anyway, just want to mention that. Later on, The Rock comes out again. I mentioned he's going to have a match with Guerrero. This is before they make that match, but he just briefly mentions Taker. He says, you know, I want to thank Kurt Angle and The Undertaker for one of the best matches I've ever seen or been in the night before. So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, exactly. So, but then that's when Guerrero comes out and they make the match. And Later on in the main event, as The Rock goes to leave, he actually winds up beating Eddie Guerrero, and I think with the Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow, just clean. He goes to leave. Lesnar's music hits because he's coming out for a Singapore cane match against Tommy Dreamer.
Wait. So. Brock Lesnar had a Singapore cane match against Tommy Dreamer?
Yes. That's... So when I said I vividly remember this episode, I vividly remember the high points. The low points I did not remember.
2002 is wild, man.
It's nuts.
Wait, was Tommy Dreamer wearing a pay-per-view shirt from the night before?
I think he was. He was wearing that or the Tommy Dreamer Psych Ward shirt. I can't, or WWE Psych Ward shirt. I can't
or
remember.
The I Do It Till It's Raw shirt.
Yeah. Oh, poor guy. Whatever's extra at the merch table, he just wears. So. Yeah. Well, Lesnar annihilated Dreamer with an F5 to end the match, as you might think. And then The Undertaker comes out and attacks him with the Singapore cane, which is payback from when Lesnar turned on him last week as his tag partner and F5'd him. So,
right.
A little bit of continuity.
Storytelling.
There. And a little bit of foreshadowing into where we're going to head next month. So
I appreciate that.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, dude, I like you, man, I remember so much of this stuff so vividly, and yet. Completely forgot that Chris Nowinski was the reason why Undertaker turned babyface.
I had no idea.
But I freaking love it. Couple things from SmackDown. Obviously, Taker back on Raw full-time for this build-up to SummerSlam since he's lost the title. But his opponent for the pay-per-view is still on SmackDown during this time because, you know, the brand split is fluid at this point, I guess, since we've got new general managers, and that's this whole storyline going into SummerSlam is that they're having this, you know, signing war between all the different superstars, and a bunch of people are just going to jump back and forth during this time. But Rey Mysterio makes his WWE debut for SmackDown on episode 153, July 25th, against Chavo Guerrero. And he gets...
In a match straight off of Nitro.
Exactly. I mean, it's the perfect way to debut Rey Mysterio, though. And I vividly remember that match, too. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get beat up backstage, because if you're a WCW guy coming in WWE, you got to pay your dues.
Yeah.
By none other than Test, who is getting a big push with this new faction called the Un-Americans that he has formed with Lance Storm and Christian. And we'll talk about that more in a second on Raw, but they get involved in the main event, this big cage match, and you probably remember this with Rey Mysterio, where he comes in and jumps off the top of the cage and just an awesome spot and becomes a huge star immediately right there. But we mentioned all this because Eric Bischoff is at the show at the end of the show, and he's going to try to steal someone away from SmackDown to retaliate for Stephanie signing away Brock Lesnar, and we see the limousine driving off. Like, who could it be? And I mean, who could match up to signing the next big thing, Brock Lesnar? Well, it's Test, Christian, and Lance Storm, and I don't know if that one quite equals out. As we find out on Raw July 29th, 2002.
It's 3-for-1, I guess.
It is 3-for-1.
I guess if you stack them all together, they make up one Brock Lesnar. So, like, put them together like a Voltron, and he's like the end game of it. So,
I mean, God bless these guys. We have fond memories of two out of those three guys, but I'm sorry, even if you put all three of them together, they don't match up with Brock Lesnar's career, dude. But I guess you didn't quite know that at the time.
No, you didn't. And I'm going to be honest with you here, man. I'm always a fan of actual heel heat. I hate when the heels had to be cool. I hate when the heels are afraid to get real heat. I love actual heel heat. And not go away Xbox sucks heat. I'm talking about real heel heat. The Un-Americans, I hated them because I was supposed to. They got heat from me as a fan and as an American. And they got legit heel heat on these episodes we're about to talk about, and like looking back at it now, and even back then, man, like I appreciated it. I think that's why we always joke about me being a fan of the RTC. I loved it, man. People, they actually got heel heat, you know. It's so hard to do, especially nowadays, but I like that about the Un-Americans, and they really do a good job of getting actual heel heat. It's pretty cheap heat, but it's easy pickings. But I don't know, it's fun to go back and watch this for me.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because this was pretty crazy. We're talking here July 29th, 2002, so 10 months removed, 9 months removed from September 11th. And that's, I mean, let's be clear, that's what they're going for here. That, I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
that patriotism was at all-time high at that
Yep.
point, and they're playing into that with this storyline, with this un-American storyline, kind of going back a little bit to the Heart Foundation angle from 1997 too, with Canada versus USA. So it's like you said, it's cheap heat. Going back and
Yep.
watching this, I was actually kind of taken aback because the crowd was really into it, man. It was working. You know, they were hating on these guys. And I, you know, I honestly, I never cared for this angle because I did think it was, to me, it was a little too cheap because it
Oh,
was
yeah.
so close to September 11th. And, you know, coming out with the flag upside down, like, I think in wrestling, I mean, I think you could get away with just about anything if you do it well. And going back and watching this, I was real impressed with Lance Storm throughout a lot of this. I thought his
Yes.
promos were excellent, and I bought into everything he was doing personally. And maybe it's because he did it in WCW too, so it kind
Right.
of felt like, all right, I buy that. I think for me the biggest thing was I just never bought Test and Christian in these roles, because it felt like all of a sudden for them, all of a sudden they hate America. Like, that was
Like,
never a big part.
yeah. Oh, like we talk about Austin all of a sudden beating up
Yes.
women and stuff. Yeah, Christian all of a sudden hates America, and you know, I see that. And let me clarify too, what I was saying earlier, like going back and watching now, I love the heat. As a
Sure.
16-year-old, I was uncomfortable. It made me uncomfortable. I did
Yeah.
think it was too soon. Yeah, let me clarify that too. I did think it was too soon, but I did appreciate they actually got real heel heat, and I love the job. Like you said, focus on Lance Storm. He was perfect at it, man. He really was.
He
So,
was.
and then yeah, Test just Vince is going to get Test over.
He
Vince is
tried.
all he tried 1,000 times to get Test over, and this was one of the 1,000 times he tried. So.
And I tell you what, man, we'll talk about this one day, but we've never been huge fans of Test. When we went to the ECW December 2 Dismember show in Augusta, Georgia, we took two signs. One was for Steven Richards, talking
Yes,
about
sir.
how he was balling. And the other one, the flip side, was that Test is a tool.
Yes.
We just hung that sign up with pride and waved it high in the sky. We never loved Test. But, dude, I tell you what, man, going back and watching this, I'll take Test any day of the week over Baron Corbin. Man, like, I enjoyed what he did out here, and I enjoyed, you know, what he brought to the table in some of these matches. There was one match, like, during the invasion stuff, he was doing some stuff that I was really impressed with, actually, going back and watching it. And, you know, I'm not going to say he's a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but I enjoyed him more than I did back then.
Yeah, well, for sure. And he's always had that Diesel comparison. In fact, his theme song was said something about Diesel in it or something too. So everybody thought he was like a younger, sleeker, more Kevin Nash. Watching him wrestle, and we're going to cover the match here with him and Taker. He really does move like a younger Kevin Nash, man. And he had all the tools, but like we talk about, sometimes you can have all the tools, but you just don't have it. And that's why Taker is the man he is, because he had all of it wrapped into one, and it's just always the top of the game. So, yeah, anyway, enough about folks and on Test. We're going to get more into it. But I just want to mention that I was a fan of Americans as an angle as far as getting heat. I was uncomfortable watching them. It did hurt me as an American to see that. But going back and see, it's been fun to watch. Like you said, Lance Storm is the best out of all three of them. So.
And he's kind of taking the lead on promo work here. He does his best
Yeah, which
here
says a
on Raw.
lot.
Oh, dude, it's great.
When Lance Storm is taking the lead on promos, that's
he's
saying a
pretty
lot.
good, man. He is hating on Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, John Wayne, you know, the pictures
Ooh.
Of America right here. And that, you know, that riles up JR. JR
Oh, yeah.
hates these guys, man.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
never heard JR hate on people so much. And he always, JR always loves to point out that they're waving the flag upside down, which is a symbol of distress. Like, he always has to make sure that we understand that that's what
Right.
the flag upside down means. Very clear on that. Never
Yeah.
subtle at all. And I also want to mention there's a giant We Miss You DDP sign in the crowd during all of this,
True.
which, you know, I don't know if I'm longing for those days quite yet of the stalker angle, but yeah, I don't know. Some of this stuff's not my favorite. But what is great here is that Eric Bischoff is going to introduce The Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young later on in the show, which are two names I did not think we'd be talking about anytime soon. But they're going to come out to promote Fabulous Moolah's book, and Eric gives Moolah approximately 3 minutes to speak. So you know troubles are brewing. So they talk. Eric Bischoff riles her up. Fabulous Moolah calls Cyndi Lauper the B word. It's incredible. But then, of course, our boys' 3 minute warning come out and beat the ever loving piss out of 2 80-year-old women.
Just like the Dudleys used to 3 years ago.
My jaw hit the floor. Like, they did not pull anything back either. Just slammed these women into the mat. You talk about things that would not fly in 2019.
Oh, no. It was uncomfortable to watch again. It was crazy.
But I speak about that because they're getting stretchered out as Eric Bischoff talks and saying he did that to prove a point that he is in charge. He orchestrated that attack, and you know, just like Thanos, all he has to do is snap his fingers and things happen. And something does happen. The entire Raw roster does, or half of the Raw roster does not disappear, but the dead man walks out. And he says, "All right, Eric, I see you're the head brother in charge now." I think he got him confused with Teddy Long there. But he asks Eric to snap his fingers again and see what happens. Well, this time it brings out the only Harvard graduate in WWE history, Christopher Nowitzki, as this feud continues on.
I love these mini feuds takers.
I do too.
This is the best.
They're the best part of this stuff. Nowitzki, he's great in this role. Like we, he's just playing this douchey frat guy to perfection, man. He calls Taker a big bully. He reminds him that Mr. Bischoff is in charge, and he tells Eric to make Undertaker apologize because it's not his fault Undertaker doesn't have a college degree. You know, that's no reason for the Undertaker to attack him. And Eric says, "You know what? I'm gonna do you one better. I'm gonna give you an opportunity to work out your ruthless aggression in a match against the Undertaker." And it's great. Nowitzki just flips on a dime and he's like,
"You can't do that. Nobody tells the Undertaker what to do. You can't make him fight just by snapping your fingers. Isn't that right, Taker?"
So good. He's so good so quick.
Like, I know.
It's funny.
It's a shame, man.
Yeah, I know.
And Undertaker says, "You're right, you know, you're right. This kid's right. You can't tell me what to do. I'm not going to wrestle him just because Bischoff says so. I'm going to wrestle you because I like to fight." And so Undertaker nails Nowitzki, gives him a stinger splash, goes for another one, but Nowitzki gets a little bit of offense, elbow, a clothesline, a drop kick, and gets a two count on Undertaker real quick. And then Undertaker lays him to rest with a big boot, old school, and last ride to finish him off. So unfortunately, we're not going to see them fight at SummerSlam.
Yeah, that'd have been neat.
That'd have been something.
It'd have been even shorter than the match we're going to cover.
But the segment actually keeps going on from there as the Un-Americans circle the ring, and they circle the Undertaker and start this 3-on-1 attack on the Undertaker with Test taking the lead for his team. Taker fights back. He tries to get out of it but loses the numbers game, and Test hit that huge big boot on Taker. And then it kind of gets sloppy here. Christian Storm try to give a concerto to Undertaker, and it looks like they just miss on the first one, and Undertaker just refuses to sell it. He just still stands there. He's like, "Nah, you gotta do something better than that." So they have to do it again, and Undertaker kind of sloppily falls down after that. They edited a lot in the video packages afterward.
Oh, yeah.
When, they did not edit it on the original show here. But Tess grabs the mic and says,
"Here lies your American badass,"
and waves that upside down flag as they plant their flag into this feud with the Undertaker to kind of stake their ground here. You talk about icons of America. You got John Wayne, and then you got the Undertaker right here. That's who you're gonna go after tonight.
Well, exactly, man. And but you know what? Like, what a better way to make a statement, regardless of how anyone feels about the Un-Americans. If it's any. It's like, think about when a faction debuts, when the Shield debuted, they made a statement, you know?
That's right.
When the Nexus debuted, huge statement, you know, NWO. Like, I mean, this is a really good, as far as getting a push and storytelling, it's really neat to see them get a lot of steam here, you know, kind of going after the big dog, you know, the guys at the top of the food chain.
That's right.
So, former champion, and you know, so it's really neat there. And you know what I was thinking too is that to later on in the night, Chris Jericho is going to come over onto Raw, and I was thinking that he was like associated with the Un-Americans, but really wasn't. I mean, I guess he was in that cage match from SmackDown where Ray jumped off the top. He was in there with him, but like I was thinking that when he came over with them, he was part of them, but he wasn't. So I think
it's one of those things that bleeds together in your mind. Yeah, because I kind of thought that too.
I think Regal gets added later on in the year them, and maybe that's what I thought. So I don't know, but anyway,
and talk Regal about just
fits in anywhere.
He does. He could pull anything off. But talk about another great TV main event. You've got The Rock and Ric Flair one on one in the main event this episode of Raw in Greensboro, North Carolina. So Rock and Eddie Guerrero 1 week and Rock and Ric Flair the next week. Man, that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, 2002, ladies and gentlemen. It's so weird. What a crazy year. So, well, yeah, that's gonna take us to the next week, man. Raw 480 on August 5th of 2002, and we're gonna see a recap from the Un-Americans beating up Taker and waving the flag, and they get interviewed backstage by Terry, who is the backstage interviewer, and you know, again, Lance Storm takes the lead on this when he says,
"Let me say in all sincerity that it's a pleasure to be here tonight in Baltimore. You see, it's a pleasure. Because we're 60 miles removed from the capital of this pitiful nation. 60 miles removed from a president who couldn't even defend his own country."
Then rips on President Bush, which was pretty low-hanging fruit at that point, and says, you know, he's from the same hometown as Undertaker.
Yeah.
So we're going with Death Valley here or Houston, which depends.
I didn't know the Bush family was from Death Valley.
From Death Valley. W, the president. So,
there. Yeah. What if they got W to come out with Taker for this SummerSlam match?
Oh, right, man. Out on the bike. That would have been insane. That would have been insane. I would love that. So, but yeah, LaStorm says, you know, that just like America, Taker's been humbled and should no longer be feared or respected. Whew. And then suddenly, another pillar of American, I guess, history, I don't know, Mr. G.I. Joe himself, Sergeant Slaughter, walks up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, who better? Who better than Slaughter?
Dude, it felt like every 6 months, Sergeant Slaughter had to get the Raw match here during this time. Yes, it was like... Did. Can King do a match tonight? No, I don't have his gear. All right, get Sarge out here. We gotta get heat on a legend. It's Sarge, King, or Mae Young and Moolah. That's the rotation like, here, man.
When we started this podcast, I feel like Sergeant Slaughter is the one I did not think we talk about as often as we do. This comes up so frequently.
But I love him, man. I love Sarge. I've got a Funko of him sitting on my desk right now.
There you go.
There he is.
Sarge, look at that. Well, Sarge is going to get Funko with Test here, going nose to nose. And Sarge says he's going to show Test real American aggression. And so I guess that means we're going to have a match. I don't know. And then so later on, Test enters by himself for his match. I thought it was weird. He didn't come out with his Un-American brothers. But anyway, again, waving that upside down flag for distress. This American flag's in distress. So Sarge enters next, got the flag right side up, thankfully.
Thank you, Sarge.
Yes, and he is looking huge.
Thick.
Looking big. He gets on the apron, starts waving the flag, and Tess just attacks him from behind, knocks him from the apron to the floor, starts beating him up and lays him out with a big boot, and then waves that flag upside down as he leaves up the ramp. So not really a match, more of an angle. And but you know what? I'm glad it wasn't a match.
Yeah, I didn't need a Test Sarge match in 2002.
Or ever, for that matter. Yeah. Later on, though, Triple H is going to interrogate the Un-Americans because Shawn Michaels' head got driven through a car windshield, and it turns out, spoiler alert, it's Triple H. But at this time, we don't know that. But he's interviewing the Un-Americans backstage, and he's like, if y'all drove Shawn Michaels' head through a car, you know, you're going to pay for it, and Taker's going to kick your butt, and ask questions later. And they deny it, of course. And then Triple H just takes his sledgehammer and just beats up the catering table for no reason, I guess to show how big bad bully he is. But I was like, and they're standing there. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's always got beef with Test. So, but
Good point.
Yeah. Well, a little bit later on, we get the Hardy Boys challenging Christian and Lance Storm for the WWE Tag Team titles. And a really fun match, actually. But it ends in DQ when Christian pulls the ref out of the ring. Test comes in, takes out Jeff with a big boot, and they're beating up the Hardy Boys. And then Taker sprints down the ramp with a biker chain in hand. So bringing that biker chain back from 1999.
Yes.
Yeah, or 2000, whatever it was, 2001. He boots Storm with it. Hits him with a chain, and then he hits Matt with a chain. I'm not sure if he was supposed to hit Matt Hardy or not, but he hits him with a chain. I don't know. Hits him, and then chases the Un-Americans to the back, and they are in the back, like the camera's in the back of the arena. They're sprinting to a getaway car, and Taker's chasing them, and then he throws a chain at him, and then he looks around for like his own ride, and he sees a police motorcycle sitting there. He just steals it. Turns the flashing lights on and everything. He turns the lights on and just drives off on a police motorcycle after them in their getaway car.
That's amazing.
It really escalated quickly.
So, is he like an honorary sheriff or something? Citizen's arrest?
Maybe. I mean, he's basically committed. I mean, that's got to be some kind of horrible.
For sure, a felony.
felony. So, but the only thing I'll say, man, is like it doesn't. We don't get to follow up to this at all, which sucks. Like if this were a Vince Russo thing, you get to follow up later that night or the next week and stuff. I want to know what happened on this joyride here when he was chasing them. So we don't ever get to see it. So, but that'll lead us to next week on Raw 481. So,
well, we don't get an update on that. Sadly, that amazing moment. Taker stealing a police bike. I guess maybe he rode it through the desert with the Big Show or something. I don't know.
Maybe so.
Things we'll never find out.
Yeah.
But we do get an update on our boy Chris Nowinski, who is now, after losing to Undertaker, is pursuing Molly Holly, and he vows on this night to do what Spike Dudley could never do.
Before long, Molly Holly is going to be my valedictorian.
With the emphasis.
Yes. The not so subtle emphasis.
Incredible. Anyway, Booker T defeats Lance Storm on this episode of Nitro. Monday Night Raw. Gary, I definitely saw that match on Nitro back in the day.
One of Lance Storm's best matches in WCW.
It was.
Is against Booker T on Nitro. It was fantastic. I'll never forget that match either.
Well, so Tess good. And the Un-Americans attack Booker T after the match, but not for long, as Goldust and The Undertaker, my new dream tag team, run out to make the save here. And for some reason, Goldust also has Mini Goldust out there running out to make the save with them. This is so good. If you thought Undertaker stealing a police bike was good, just wait till he teams up with Mini Dust. Well, they chase the Un-Americans over the guardrail out into the crowd, and then Mini Dust tries to follow him, but he can't get over the railing and keeps jumping up over it and tries to jump off the stairs over it, but can't get over it. And I don't care who you are, man, that was funny.
It reminded me of the Sideshow Bob thing from The Simpsons where he keeps hitting the rakes in his face, and he does it like six times.
It's comedy gold, man.
Never makes it.
Mini Dust.
Oh, you know Vince
getting
is backstage
a huge push.
Dying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mini Dust getting Vince a huge push right here. Because we come back from commercial, and Mini Dust and Bischoff are in the ring together.
yeah. Come back from. You're flipping channels. You come back, and you're like, is that Harry Bischoff? It's. Really tiny gold dust.
I'm watching this.
Oh yeah, I'm staying.
Well, Bischoff makes a match after all that segment between the Un-Americans and Triple H against Booker T, Gold Dust, Undertaker, and The Rock, which that's just amazing right there.
Oh yeah.
And Bischoff gloats and says this is why Raw is a superior product. He gives the people what they want, and what they want is Mini Dust. And I was applauding on my couch, saying, yes, give me more. So Bischoff gives Mini Dust a chance to entertain the crowd here. He does some cartwheels and pretty weak spin-a-rooney. And according to Eric, he stopped being entertaining about 3 minutes ago.
Ooh.
Which brings out 3 Minute Warning, who absolutely murder this little person in the ring. They give him a top rope power slam. I think it was Rosie standing on the top rope with Mini Dust on his shoulder and just jumps off from the top rope and lands on him.
Golly.
Dude, 3 Minute Warning. I don't. They could have done that gimmick for 20 years, man.
Just oh yeah.
Never had a match. Just run in and kill people. That would have been fine with me. I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know how they didn't actually kill these people.
I don't know.
Well, then as Mini Dust is laying dead in the ring, Eric Bischoff is standing at the commentary table with JR and King, and he says, "This is a great time to bring out my newest acquisition from SmackDown, Stacy Keibler." Who comes out, takes her pants off, and dances on Mini Dust's grave and on the announce table as Kid Rock sings in the background and King dies and just goes to heaven.
So those last 12 minutes were your favorite segment.
That, my friend, is the greatest segment in professional wrestling history, what I just described to you. That was absolutely off the rails, bonkers, crazy. I'm so glad it happened.
And you know
what? That's why I love wrestling.
Who wasn't there? Who wasn't there writing that? Vince Russo was not there writing that.
That's our promo of the week right there. That 10 minutes of television.
You got a little person getting beat up.
Not a little person. Mini gold dust. Yeah. Not just a little person.
Stacy taking her pants off and dancing on the stage.
While he's being stretchered off. Yeah.
Well, Kid Rock is playing. Oh, man. It doesn't get more American than that, does it?
It does not. That's what we love about America. Well,
I do want to mention one thing I love about these last 2 weeks. You mentioned Taker coming out earlier that's going to lead to that 8-man tag. When he comes out, and the same thing on last week before he steals the bike, he just runs out. There's no music playing. The crowd doesn't get a chance. Like, he just runs out. And that little nuance is so lost nowadays. You don't get that chance. And I understand why they do it nowadays. They used to do it a lot back then too. You want to get that pop, especially for the TV audience, you know, them know what's going on. But there's something to be said about just people sneaking out or running out like unseen and I don't know, just unexpected. So when he ran out, you get an actual pop from the crowd, not just a reaction to that music. It's an actual pop to seeing him. So I did want to mention that before we get to the biggest 8-man tag team match in Raw history, as they say backstage.
Well, I 100% agree with you, man. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, you're doing a run-in, you got to check by the grill business and be like, hey, man, get the music up before you run out there.
Yeah. Yo, Kevin, don't hear my music. Yeah.
I think maybe it's like the old TitanTron Live playset. Oh. Maybe all the wrestlers have a chip in their foot,
in their boots,
when they cross over the entryway. It plays their music. Something they all get installed in. That's how I explain it.
That's how when you're running from the audience, it doesn't do it. Yeah, I get it. If you don't cross that threshold of the Raw,
they've all got it implanted in there.
Vince implants it in their boots. He owns them. Oh man.
Well, yeah, man, that is going to be our main event. We got this big tag match. 8-man tag, and who better than Goldust to kick things off for his team in the ring to take the lead. Dude, I love this combination right here. Give me more of it.
This match is so fun.
So good. That is a great TV main event, man. Eight guys at the top of their game.
And look at the un-Americans, again, talking about them getting a big push. They're rubbing elbows with Taker, Triple H, and The Rock.
That's right.
To mention Goldust and Booker T. I mean, boom, say at the time, those guys weren't Hall of Famers yet, you know, but the other ones already were, you know. So, like, again, talking about getting a push, these guys, the office is behind these guys. And so, especially Tess, because earlier on he mentions that Bischoff gives him a match with Taker at SummerSlam. So, yeah, but anyway, go ahead, cover this match. It's so fun.
And it's the All American team here. JR says Undertaker is as American as a Texas plate of brisket. Absolutely. Yes, sir. You know it's got to be that Schmitz family barbecue brisket, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be.
JR, man. Anytime he can get some meat or barbecue.
Or America.
That, too.
Well, the hot tag in this match is fantastic, dude. The crowd starts chanting, "We want Taker."
Yeah.
During the match as he waits for the perfect moment to tag in. You know, he's the tag team specialist out there.
Oh, yeah.
Leading his team from the apron. And it's perfect, man. Watch, the hot tag moment. This is what it's supposed to be, because you got the two guys in the ring, and the other six guys, the faces and the heels, all of them are reaching their hands in the ring.
Yes.
Like, straining to get in there. both teams are doing it. And I was like, yes, that is what you're supposed to do, man. Like, act like it's real. Act like you're trying to get in there and save your partner. Do whatever you can. That's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, yeah. And when he gets that tag, there's not a butt in a seat there. Everyone is standing up. Every person in that arena is standing on their feet when Taker gets that hot tag. It is insane to watch.
It's a real fun sequence at the end. You know, it's a classic. Everybody going for their finisher. Then another guy runs in. They're reversing stuff. That's all over the place. Undertaker ends up in the ring with Lance Storm and gives him a choke slam and then goes for a last ride on Christian. But Test runs in there as Taker has Christian up in the air, and Test boots Taker right in the face. Christian falls on top of him, and Test pins the Undertaker to get that big victory on the road to their match at SummerSlam, man. It's a huge win in this tag match, and it kills the crowd momentarily, but they are about to be in for a treat after the show, dude, because more important than anything we talked about tonight, after the show, this is the legendary night where all these guys in the ring and in the locker room played an enormous rib on the Undertaker and tried to force him to do a spin-a-rooney in the middle of the ring after the show. And if you listening out there have never seen this, absolutely stop listening to this podcast right now. Go search for Undertaker spin-a-rooney on YouTube and go out of your way to see... I talked about the greatest segment in professional wrestling history earlier. This is the greatest moment in professional wrestling history. I don't care who you are. This is hilarious. It's amazing. Booker T, Goldust, Triple H, The Rock, and eventually Vince McMahon trying to get The Undertaker to do a spin-a-rooney, and Undertaker hates every moment of it.
He's for a shoot. He's angry at them. Get him to do it. It's so fun to watch, man. Oh, man, it's so fun. I want to take a Rooney. We did not get
it. They wanted to take a Rooney. We got a McMahon-a-Rooney. We got a Triple H-a-Rooney, a Rock-a-Rooney, a Goldust-a-Rooney. And they're just all on the mic, just being hilarious, out of character, all of them.
I can't believe for one second that The Undertaker doesn't have the balls to do a take a Rooney. Problem here, but if you just let me come in here, I want to see this firsthand, because I know no screwing around, Rock, no screwing around. This is serious business now, because 12 damn years of dead man walking. I want to see one damn night of dead man spinning.
It's so, so great. I don't know whose idea it was. If we ever get a chance to actually interview The Undertaker, I don't care about anything he actually did in his career. This is the number one thing I want to know about is this night. Like, how close was he to actually doing it? How mad was he? Like, how much of this was a shoot? I need to know every detail about the night they tried to get Undertaker to do a spin-a-rooney. It's my favorite.
I bet every one of those guys got taken to wrestler's court backstage and owed him a lot of Jack Daniels.
He was close, man. You go back and watch it. He was thinking about it. He was going back and forth. And I don't lip read real well. I need someone to tell me like what they're saying to each other as he's talking to everybody. Because it's, it's great.
This is on that Raw after the show DVD thing you got me a few years ago. Yeah, it's excellent to watch, man. It's so much fun. And I didn't realize it was from this night until you brought it up. So that's awesome. So, yeah, that's so fun, man.
I wish I could have been. It goes on for like 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah, it's so long.
And nobody leaves. They're there for the whole time.
Crowds are the entire time. It's awesome. Oh, man, so awesome. Well, that's taking us into the next week of Raw. How can it get any better than that episode of Raw?
We can't. It's all downhill from here. Although this promo, this promo's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So we're about to open up Raw 482 on August 19th with this is the go-home show for the SummerSlam. Taker's going to open the show riding out on his motorcycle to the ring, and he is mean mugging. He's not in a good mood, probably because of Taker-Rooney the week before. Who knows? But he gets on the mic, and he says, you know, I've never been one to make my political opinions public, but I know I'm not the poster child for the All-American boy, but just like my country, I don't take no. And he just drops the S-bomb on television. I think that's four times in 2002 we've covered that word.
Yeah. Pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, so he is dropping four-letter words. And do you remember not so long ago, back about 1997 or 8, there was a certain Undertaker got in the ring and said he didn't have to say cuss words like Stone Cold Steve Austin to get the crowd to
pop. I mean, that was the dead man, man.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. This definitely fits his character. But I was just blown away that he said that. And they didn't bleep it on the network either, so it was funny. But big USA chants, you know, after that, of course, that's easy. And Taker said, you know, that's why I'm proud to be a man and to be an American. But which I don't know what that has to do with anything, but whatever. But he says something about, like, only in America can I be who I want to be. And he says,
that's the very reason that I'm proud to be a man and I'm proud to be an American. Damn right you are. And we all are. Because only in America can a man like me be me. If I want to be a tattooed, fire-breathing dragon, well, that's all right with you.
So, that's the second time he's referred to himself as a dragon, I think. So,
he was trying to get that nickname over, but didn't quite.
Oh, the fire-breathing dragon. Yeah,
you guys call me the dragon. You can't give yourself a nickname, Tate.
No. If you give yourself a nickname, no one's going to call you that. So, but
I'm just going to call you Booger Red instead.
It would go the opposite way. Well, he says he enjoys his freedoms in America, and a lot of people fought and died to give him those rights, and he respects the individuals that did that, and he's got a problem with people coming into his country and disrespecting those freedoms, and he's talking about the un-Americans and specifically Test. And at this moment, we get a cool sign in the audience that says, Test still works here?
Did you bring that?
It was not me taking that in. It could have been, though.
It could have.
It's a great sign. Test still works here? So, oh, man, I love that. So, yeah, he's not afraid to pledge his allegiance to the United States of America. This is where, and excuse me, he says, at SummerSlam, I was going to take Test, make an example out of him to everyone around the world. And I will show what happens when you screw with America. I'm not your all-American boy, but I am the American BA. And JR is just as excited as he was for Jeff Hardy climbing the ladder. And you can almost hear his Bell's palsy kicking in again. It's out of control. But, dude, they are in Virginia this evening. So what better place to have a pro-America, like, thing in 2002 than Virginia, you know? So
Undertaker's got my vote after that, man.
Undertaker 2020.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Hyped up.
Yeah, he was, man. And that was the real guy right there.
It
saying
was.
Stuff that
right.
had nothing to do with.
That was Mark Calloway cutting that promo.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, then Taker's music hits while he's still in the ring, and it's kind of strange. And Test rides out on a little crotch rocket, like a motorcycle. And I'm pretty sure he had to learn how to ride this day. He's not looking comfortable on this thing. He's not look comfortable. And he gets in the ring and actually snatches the microphone from Taker, and he says, "You know, I thought that only America sucked. Now I can see that you do too." Which that's just not something you want to say to the Undertaker. So Taker just had enough and just beats on him repeatedly. And of course, Christian and Storm come out and attack him. And then Booker T and Goldust, Taker's, you know, newfound buddies, come out. And they stand tall as the Un-Americans retreat up the ramp. And Booker, again, if you've seen wrestling for more than one day, you know what's about to happen. And Booker T says that he and Goldust and Taker aren't finished with them and challenges them to a six-man tonight. And the Un-Americans all nod, I guess, choosing to accept this match. So,
And the crowd is red hot for this.
Yes.
Dude, like you said, this Virginia crowd is eating this stuff right out of their hands.
Oh, yeah. You can't ask for any better reactions than this crowd is giving them. And like I said, this whole build is hot. These Un-Americans have so much heat on them, and Taker is such the American guy. Like, he's a perfect foil for them, man. There's no one else they could have gone against except for Kurt Angle, but he's a heel, you know? Like, if Angle was the babyface 2001 guy, it would have worked when he was feuding with Austin, but he wasn't. He was a heel at this point. So, nobody better than feuding with Taker here.
And dude, what better symbolization of America than you got this white biker redneck teaming with a black guy, teaming with a gold freak out there, man. Only in America, man. Land of the free. It's great.
That's right. It's perfect. Man. That's right. Well, before we get to that match, Eric Bischoff backstage in a moment that echoes probably his real life views. He tells Trish and Stacy, "No one cares about women's wrestling at all."
That's a quote.
That's literally what he says. No one cares about women's wrestling, and he books them in a bra and panties match in the mud.
We've literally just gone to mud wrestling at this point for the women.
Yep, and that was some nasty mud. It was disgusting. I've never been in any kind of mud like that. So, yeah, it's like pudding.
Oh, those poor women, man.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, that's one thing they didn't show on the highlight reels of the Women's Evolution last year.
Not so much.
Or when the women main event WrestleMania, they didn't show this quote where Bischoff literally says, "No one cares about women's wrestling." But anyway. This match here, Booker Goldust and Taker, which, again, I'd love to see way more of.
Yes, give me more.
Yeah, give me more of this. And we're going to take on the Un-Americans, big old six-man tag. And, again, fun match, not quite as good as last week in fun, but Taker's more involved earlier on in this match. He doesn't quite get the hot tag late like he did earlier. But, anyway, match kind of ends with Taker hitting the snake eyes and a big boot on Test, clotheslines over the top, choke slams Lance Storm. And then Tess pulls Taker out, and they start brawling on the outside. And they're fighting up the ramp as the match is going on in the ring. I think Christian nails Goldust with a tag belt as the ref's distracted and gets the pinfall. And Taker tries to slide it in the last second to knock him off, but he can't. So that's how we end the build-up to SummerSlam with these matches. So anyway, it's still fun. Honestly, it's kind of ended on a higher note the week before. With that big eight-man tag, but this was still fun, man. Again, it gets all these stories because Booker T and Goldust are going to go against Storm and Christian at the pay-per-view, and Test is going to go against Taker, so it all made sense. But
and that takes us to the SummerSlam 2002, August 25th, 2002, from the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale, New York. And
yes, sir.
I will never forget this pay-per-view, man. I was hyped up for it, ordered this one live, which was, you know, it was a hassle back then because you had to get the pay-per-view box out and hook it up and all that sort of stuff. So that was a big deal in our house. But I had to see Shawn Michaels get back in the ring, man. Shawn Michaels, you know, Hulk Hogan, you know, is one of my number ones, but Shawn Michaels was absolutely my favorite, and I never thought he'd be back in the ring and had no idea what it was going to be like when he got back in the ring, but I was hooked and I had to see it. And that still goes down. It's probably in my top five matches of all time, dude. Shawn Michaels and Triple H right here on this pay-per-view. It was one of the most incredible things I'd ever seen live.
Oh, yeah, man. And this is one that, as far as I can recall, this would be our second pay-per-view we watched together, our first SummerSlam live. So I remember somehow I got to skip church that night or come over early or head out, but I got to come to your house for this night and watch this with you because we were both hyped up for Shawn's return. Again, because remember, I mean, I'd only seen him wrestle for a couple years before he quit. I'd seen a lot of his old stuff since then, but like as far as when I was actively watching, I'd only seen him wrestle a few years before he retired, you know. And so, yeah, seeing that and being pumped about The Rock and Brock, being pumped about Benoit and RVD, a Raw versus SmackDown
great match.
The Un-Americans versus Booker Dust or whatever, Golden Tee? Is
that their name? Golden Tee, yeah.
They should have had a licensing thing with the golf game, the golf arcade, Golden Tee.
I can just see Goldust playing Golden Tee. Rubbing that ball, just massaging it. I need a backstage segment of that.
Yeah, exactly. But man, just this whole Ric Flair and Jericho,
Kurt Angle and Mysterio,
in one of the best openers
for sure
of all time. I mean, seriously, you put this up against almost anything. I mean, a lot of people talk about WrestleMania openers and stuff. Like, this is one of the best openers on any show ever. I mean, just seeing Ray in his first pay-per-view in WWE was fantastic. So, yeah.
It's one of my favorite cards from top to bottom. Oh, yeah. SummerSlam 02. I love it. I've rewatched it many, many times.
Yeah. and this is probably my favorite SummerSlam, I'd say. I mean, there's some other iconic ones, like we've covered some here, 92 and 94 and stuff, but like as far as me being a fan and being fully involved in this whole thing, I think this is my favorite SummerSlam of all time, man. I really think it is.
And you'll notice that we did not say too much about this match right here.
Exactly.
It's unfortunately not one of the top tier matches, not one I think either one of us was very excited about. It's it is still got a big place on the card. It goes on third from the top underneath just the Shawn Michaels return match against Triple H and the Undisputed Title main event. So it is positioned strongly for The Undertaker. He's not fallen too far down the card, but it just doesn't have that same hype level and excitement as some of this other stuff on this show. And we oddly get a video package before the match, but it's just about the Un-Americans. It's not about their feud. It's just building up them as a faction. Not really about them and the Undertaker. So,
but let's think about this too. I just literally just occurred to me. This is in New York, right?
It is,
which is the site of 9/11. You That's know, right. So showing that is going to get them massive heat. You know, right. As far as that. But yeah, I think the only thing dealing with Taker just had to do with they showed a clip of the concerto they gave him. But yeah, basically it's a hype promo. Video package for the Un-Americans. It's not even building up the feud between them, really. But I think one reason this match got kind of overlooked and like underhyped for you and I back in the day is because I think we pretty much knew the outcome. I mean, you could see Test push, but I think we kind of knew, like, Taker just lost the title. He's not going to lose Test here. In hindsight, being 2020, we know where he's headed to. So, you know, he's headed onto some stuff with Brock, so you know he's not going to lose here. But anyway.
And, dude, I tell you what, I would have been more hyped for this match if it was a flag match. Too.
Yes!
Why the heck was this not a flag match? I was thinking that as they both came out. Well, Undertaker didn't have a flag when he came out, but Test came out with the flag in distress, as JR makes sure to point out.
Yes.
Dude, should have been a flag match. We got so much more heat.
I know. Oh, absolutely. It sure would have got more heat, man. They could do it. Man, it would have been fun. But maybe it was too gimmicky for what they were going for here. I don't know. But anyway, that definitely would have been fun for one night.
Well, we do have JR and King back on commentary as we finally figured out how to do the commentary teams 4 months, 4 months into this. JR King called the Raw matches, and Cole and Taz called the SmackDown matches.
Golly. Finally. But, give that guy a raise.
Whoever that idea came up with that. But JR assures us that this ain't going to be no wrestling match.
Right. He's going ahead and getting that out there. It's going to be a fight. Tells us that Taker's a 4-time WWE champion and a 7-time tag champion. Doesn't list any of Test's accolades. Or the fact that he still has immunity, I guess, till November.
Yeah, he's still there.
That's why he's still there. That's why he still works there. Yeah, man, Taker poses in the ring with his arms raised. He does all four sides, I think. It's just funny to me. Two episodes ago, we were talking about his heel heat he had going on and stuff, and then last week was his tweener role, and here he's just complete 180 since two episodes ago, man. It's just, and this crowd has basically forgotten the last 8 months of his heel turn.
They made it all up.
Yeah, he is just spoon-feeding them babyface pop-ups, and they are choking them down, man. It is amazing, so... I just made up a new cereal.
Baby face pops.
Snap, crackle, baby face pops. I can't.
Oh, man. That sounds delicious.
I have a bowl of those for breakfast. Oh, man.
Ugh. Well, they get started here in the ring. It's filling out process. To begin here, both guys getting some stuff in. Taker gets a high-flying clothesline and gets a quick two count to start things off, as he tends to do here. And then Undertaker works over the arm, quickly goes up top for old school, but Test shoves the referee, Jack Doan, into the ropes and crotches Undertaker. And I don't understand how that was not just a blatant disqualification right there. Yeah. Test just shoved the referee.
I have no idea, man. Oh, Taker did a leapfrog before that, too, when they're feeling out each other.
Yeah.
He leapfrogs over Test's head. It's insane.
Pretty impressive.
Jumps right over his head. But, yeah, why was that not a ref, a DQ or anything? I don't know. Maybe the ref was so so pro-America, he didn't want to give them the satisfaction of being DQ'd here, so...
Well, King tries to save it on commentary. He says, oh, the ref must have known Undertaker wouldn't want to win by disqualification.
Ah,
like, you know, at least he's trying to cover for
exactly.
that, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Well, Taker goes down the outside, and Tess throws him in the steps, and he does an even bigger Mick Foley bump over the stairs than he did last week. But this time, he doesn't fall asleep. So
that's good.
But it's huge, man. He's just nailing those stairs with his knees and flipping over them. And they get back in the ring, and Tess in control, and elbowing in the corner, leg chokes in the corner. And this is where he really reminds me of Kevin Nash. Like, it's all his, the stuff he does in the corner, the leg, the style he has reminds me of Nash. Of course, Nash can, in my opinion, work circles around him because he's Kevin Nash. But charisma out the butt, even if he has one quad. So, Kevin Nash has more charisma with one quad than
Tess quad.
Does ever.
Ugh, boy. Taker tries to fight out of the corner. He does some headbutts into Tess's gut, but Tess cuts him off and runs Taker into the opposite corner. And then Tess gets an arm bar, and a nice touch here from Tess. I like he's got the arm bar, but he's grinding his knee and Undertaker's head on the ground. So he's not just doing the rest hold. He's you know, doing some action there on Undertaker on the ground, which I appreciate. A nice little touch there.
Yeah, and this wakes the crowd up a little bit. You know, they're kind of quiet for some of this, but when, you know, your baby face is in a hold like this, an arm bar, whatever, the crowd, the good fans they are, start cheering and willing him out of it and clapping to get Taker out of it. So that was pretty fun to see. I always appreciate the old school psychology of that. Taker punches out and hits a side suplex. They just keep punching each other back and forth. Taker gets a running DDT for a two count. Again, this is not a technical masterpiece, and JR even told us that. So
Taker goes up top, and he gets his old school in as you know, wakes the crowd up, and King even notes on commentary, hey, he's got to get that one in one way or another. Got to get spots in, brother.
Oh, yeah. He gets crap in. Yeah, then he's after that, he's going to hit snake eyes, and then Test goes for a pump handle slam attempt, but Taker reverses out of it and goes to try a choke slam. And then Tess reverses out of that and goes for a big boot, and Taker ducks that and then gets a chokeslam on Tess, but only gets two counts. So really cool little series right there of them reversing everything. And then Tess kicking out at two was kind of a big deal too.
Yeah, JR was like, oh, I can't believe that. Not too many people have ever done that.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat true. Taker gives the old fist raise, but that brings out Lance Storm and Christian, the other un-Americans, to interfere here. And Taker brings them into the ring, as JR notes. You know, they're not going to get disqualified because Undertaker brought them into the action. And Taker just goes crazy on both these guys, hits them both with the stinger splashes and choke slams. But that's going to allow Tess to take over and hit that big, beautiful boot on the Undertaker. That beautiful boot footage.
Which, again, has been getting over, and he's been finishing matches off with that. But Taker kicks out at two, which again was a big deal. The crowd was pops for that. So him kicking out was kind of a big deal. Well, then Test is going to go grab a chair. I guess he's had enough. He's going to just end things here. So he grabs a chair and brings it in the ring. Referee Jack Doan tries to grab it from him, but Test just like shoves him like he's a goldfish. Just throws him halfway across the ring.
How many times have you shoved a goldfish?
I'm just saying the way he flopped across the ring was like a fish.
Why are you going around shoving goldfish, dude?
I never have.
Went through the aquarium aisle of Walmart just shoving goldfish tanks out there?
I just went the way
he flopped. You're such a heel.
I'm such a heel.
Need to eat your baby face pops.
I will. All right. Totally, I'll have for breakfast. Oh, man. Well, Goldfish Dome gets shoved down, and then Taker boots that chair into Tess's face, which has kind of become a calling card these last few months, booting chairs into each other's faces.
Yeah.
We saw that with Rock and with Austin and all kinds of stuff. So he boots it in his face, and then he's going to hit a move that he hasn't hit. He's hit very seldom here this babyface run, or this American BA run.
And that's probably why, because he's been a heel for so long. And this gets a big pop as Undertaker lifts Test up for the tombstone for a 1-2-3 red, white, and blue burial of the un-American Test. Gives the Undertaker the feel good, patriotic win here at just 8 minutes and 18 seconds, so definitely on the shorter side of some stuff that we've covered lately. The Undertaker, he's going to celebrate here, rolls out of the ring, looks like he's looking for something, and he hops into the crowd and grabs a fan's flag, unfurls it, and heads back in the ring, stands up on the top rope and raises that flag above his head in a pretty great, pretty iconic moment there as the Undertaker celebrates raising the flag up. Pretty cool visual.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, the only thing missing would have been his jacket from, was that Survivor Series 93 or whatever. Yeah. So that would have been great if he'd had that. But yeah,
perfect.
He has this flag draped over his back. He's holding it out with his arms out, you know, like a crucifix. And it's a great, great sign and great feel good moment, especially for the New York crowd there. They needed that. So that was fun. Sometimes you got to give, just, you got to pander and you got to give the crowd that. So it worked out, man. And then there's some like strange edit. I don't know what happens. We get like on the network, you get these weird like crowd shots, but I don't know what Taker's doing or what's happening.
Yeah,
but
it's weirdly chopped up after he tries to give the flag back to the fan. I tried to look up some stuff to see what was on the original, but I couldn't find anything. So if any of you Creatures of the Night know if there was something different that happened on the original footage, something weird that happened, because the network is real choppy editing.
Yeah.
Here. It looks like they had to cut some words some action out. I don't know what happened here, but it's
who knows? He could have done like Up Yours, Iraq, or something.
I don't know.
I wouldn't put it past him back then. So, but anyway, but man, this only, like I said, only 8 minutes, just a little bit over eight minutes. But it didn't need to be any more than that, man. It was fun. Uh-huh. Like it was a fast pace. I wouldn't put it up there as, you know, top 10 match or anything. But like it was fun. Like it got the point across, and he got a good win, and Test still looked good in defeat. You know, he got his signature spots in, and it was just, it was fast paced. Didn't need to be 25 minutes long, not a main event style. You know, it was just a fun little house show or Raw match. And I dug how quick it was, I think.
Yeah. You know, looking back with the benefit of time, you can see this for what it was. It was a nice little transition as Undertaker is going back to that babyface role, and they're setting him up for this run with Brock Lesnar here for a couple months. So they're going to give him a big, strong win, make him look good, you know, get that big patriotic feel, really get the crowd behind him for this run. And it kind of goes back to something we've talked about here many times, as the Undertaker gets to be sort of, you know, pardon the pun, but he gets to be a rock in the Federation of Stability, because in the main event, The Rock is going to put over Brock Lesnar in a very, very big moment and a big win for Lesnar, as the crowd kind of turns on The Rock here this night, gets fully behind Lesnar. But The Rock's going back to Hollywood here. Stone Cold has taken his ball and gone home. So the Undertaker's going to step up and be the babyface to carry them through the fall here with his match against Lesnar, and really try to establish this next big thing as the next big star. And that's going to be what we cover here for the next couple weeks on the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, storyline-wise, Test probably needed this win more, the push. But, yeah, as far as the benefit of hindsight, like you said, knowing where Taker's going, he needed this win. And, again, it's he and Lesnar are going to carry SmackDown while Triple H and Shawn carry Raw, you know, as far as the main event scene goes. Even though, and all those guys are from the Attitude Era, except for Lesnar, you know, trying to push him as the next thing, create a new star here. So it's really, really neat to see. And, you know, Taker's the guy that's going to give him that final push over to the top into superstardom, in my opinion. So.
Absolutely. And we can't wait to talk about those two really, really fun matches that we'll get to talk about the next few weeks coming up next
week.
Long
matches.
Yeah. It's going to be Unforgiven 2002, the first ever encounter between Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. We want to have you join us here for that. Go ahead and watch it. Watch it before you listen to the show, so you'll have you'll know what we're talking about here. We always encourage you to follow along with us on the WWE Network. And we always want to hear your comments on the match we just talked about as well. Tell us what you thought of SummerSlam 2002. If you were saying the Pledge of Allegiance along with The Undertaker as he pinned Test, were you big Test fans? Did you see a lot more in him than we saw? Were you cheering him along? Were you cheering on the Un-Americans? Were they your second favorite faction, like they were for Travis? We want to hear.
I can go with
they tied for number one.
Go with it. No, I cannot go with it. I cannot go with it. I will not.
I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. But seriously.
Well, we want to hear about it. Hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Talking Taker. Real easy to find on all those services. We did get a few comments from some of you, and pretty cool. We got a couple people who were at the show. So
sweet.
Our buddy from a long time ago, Michael Larkin, who, if you'll remember, I guested on his show, the Max Wrestling Podcast, long, long time ago when we were first getting started. He was at SummerSlam 2002 on Long Island in New York. He says that the show and the crowd were amazing from top to bottom, and there was a huge pop for Undertaker disposing of the Un-Americans and raising up Old Glory. He said it was an amazing sight, which we absolutely agree with there. Thanks, Mike, for reaching out to us. You can find him. He is at Larkin_92 on Instagram. That's where he left us those comments. He's also on Twitter at SMShow1 on Twitter. He's got a lot of different podcasts. You can go follow him along, and we encourage you to support him. And then, oddly enough, another guy that we guested on the show at Watch Along Wrestling. He shared his memories of being at SummerSlam 2002. Tommy.
Nice.
I was just on his show a couple weeks ago discussing our WrestleMania stuff. He said this is his very first live show, and he remembered that Rock and Brock Lesnar match as they kind of got that John Cena, Roman Reigns treatment there. With that, every time they got mentioned or shown on the screen, Rock got booed there. You know, kind of bizarro world crowd. And talks about the Rock cutting a promo after the show went off the air, saying, trying to get his catchphrases out, and the crowd just booing the crap out of him.
Oh, nice.
Finally, he said, it doesn't matter where the Rock has come back to them. So, good stuff there. Thanks, guys, for sharing that. Cool to hear, like Travis asked for every week, a couple guys who were at the show live.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. We love hearing about that. And, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on, you know, all the podcasting services. Leave us a comment and a rating. That helps boost the show up as well. We appreciate each and every one of you who goes to download every week. And we appreciate each and every one of you who are out there buying our shirts and wearing the Talking Taker merch. It goes a long way to help out the show here. Pick us up at tpublic.com. You can just search for Talking Taker on there and find any of our designs and get them in a beautiful design. Get you a tank top for the summer. Pull the straps down. Let everybody know you mean business. And, of course,
it is spring. Love is in the air.
You know it. And if you're going out there to meet The Undertaker, it'd make a great thing to wear. I know you just did some meet and greets this weekend. Saw some awesome pictures with fans posted all over social media. If you want to tell us about your encounter with the dead man, I believe he was over in the UK this past week. Hit us up. Let us know how it was. What was it like to finally stand in the presence of Big Evil, of the fire-breathing dragon? Let us know what that was like. We'd love to hear that and share that on the show as well. And don't want to forget about our buddies at the Bottom Line Podcast, going through the career of Stone Cold Steve Austin in much the same way we're going through The Undertaker's career. They're in that sweet spot of 1998, covering, you know, the highway to hell when Stone Cold was taking on The Undertaker and Kane and all that great stuff that we got to cover a few months back. If you want to hear it from the Stone Cold perspective of things, go check those guys out wherever you find podcasts and on social media as well. Give those guys a follow. We love those guys and what they're doing as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, I'm so glad you guys responded that you were actually there, because like I said, I always ask if you were there, you know, let us know what happened. So really cool that two of you guys we've actually had interactions with. Alex, you've been on their podcast. It's kind of funny how that worked out. But anyway, I just checked our Twitter too, and it looks like Randy Turco, our old time traveling correspondent, said that he wasn't so happy that Taker fell so far down the card. But after he watched the HBK Triple H match, he realized no one's going to remember anything else in the show anyway.
Oh, man. Favorite matches of all time. It's
between that and the main event, and I watched both of those back as well. I watched this, the Taker match, and then the rest of the card. Because it's funny, because this match, Taker and Test, begins halfway through the card, and there's only two matches after it. It's funny. It's like I think the whole card is 2 hours and 40 minutes, and this match starts at hour 21 or something, so it's pretty funny. But anyway, yeah, man, those of you out there, we thank you guys for listening. Thank you for interacting with us and talking to us. Our numbers are going up on Twitter and our downloads and stuff, so we appreciate it. Again, we're just excited that anyone listens and cares to talk to us. And like Alex said, if you're going to meet Taker, wear some Talking Taker stuff, because we got some cool stuff in store for you if you can. And prove to us that you met him wearing our garb. We got some really cool classic one-of-a-kind stuff just for you. So anyway, other than that, ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
And take a Rooney.
Say like, yeah, Caroni and take a Rooney. Yeah. You gotta leave that in there.
See Taker embarrass himself and do the Taker-rooney. Hey man, don't stand too close to me, man. I'll whip your monkey ass, man. What's wrong with you? Listen, don't get all excited. You'll screw the whole thing up. Now listen, I know, after everything you and I have been through, I know you've got the balls to do a spin-a-rooney. Hell, even I've got the balls to do a spin-a-rooney. Actually going to do one. I meant just to tell him, like, I would do one. How about this? No, because I would do one, really serious. I would do one, if, you know, just like, well, hell, if that's the case, if you'll do one, if he'll do one, that means I'll do one if you do one, if he'll do one. To see him do it. Fair enough. Damn thing, will ya?